Well, hi, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. Welcome to our show. Today is June 23rd, 2022, here on Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and thanks for listening. We do appreciate you doing that. Maybe you're listening on the archives. We archive everything over at our home website, which is ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's our home website for the Consortium for Equity in Education. We have a ton of links over there to all we do, social-emotional learning, teacher retention, the educator shortage, our Excellence in Equity Awards, all our podcasts are there, and, of course, our magazine, which is our online journal, of which we are very proud, which is Equity in Access Pre-K-12. You can go over to ace-ed, check it all out, ace-ed.org, check it all out and enjoy it. We got a nice show today with a new best friend in the whole world. We're going to have Sheila. I'll bring her on right now. We're going to have Dr. Sheila Gallagher on. And Sheila, hi, Sheila. I just brought you on. How you doing, Sheila? It's Larry here.
Hi, Larry. I'm happy to be here.
Happy to have you. Okay. And you, just so you know, you're the president-elect of the National Association for Gifted Children. Mazel tov. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's an honor.
It is. I agree with you. You're also chair of the Advocacy Committee for the North Carolina Association for Gifted and Talented. Are you in North Carolina now? Are you there?
I am. I'm in Charlotte.
Charlotte. Very good. Good town. Okay. She is also director, you ready for this, of Engaged Education. Which is your company, I assume, where you consult, provide professional learning for teachers, and you also write curriculum. I assume that probably has to do with gifted and talented. And again, it's Sheila Gallagher, everybody. Dr. Gallagher. Okay, today's we're going to talk about an effort in North Carolina that's been happening to raise awareness and advocacy about what Sheila calls, and what I think a lot of people call, the excellence gap. All right, and Sheila, you sent me a link to something called Americans Agree. And the link would not open no matter how many times I try. I couldn't find. So I'm going to start. That's okay. We're going to get into it, okay? It has to do with a report, okay, about this excellent gap. All right? So I want excellence, excuse me, gap. So I just want to let you, we'll give a little warning that we're going to talk about that, but I don't know much about it at this stage. So we're going to get you into it. But I want to ask you something. When we were preparing this show, you used an acronym I'm not familiar with, which is CLED students, like the word CLED, if it were a word. CLE, what's CLED mean?
CLED is the current acronym for culturally, linguistically, or economically diverse students.
Thank you. It's a new one on me. Thank you. But just what we need is another acronym. All education, thank you. Okay? So let me do it again. It's culturally, linguistically, what's the E for?
Economically.
Economically disadvantaged students?
Diverse.
Diverse, sorry. Okay, there we go. That's good. Thank you. I did not pass that test.
Happy to share a new acronym with you.
It's good because we need a new acronym. Okay, CLED,
yeah.
Students, okay? I'm trying to were you an educator? Are you an educator now? What do you do now? Or do you just do now engaged education? Just talk about all this, your background, et cetera, Madam President-elect.
Yeah, my background. I was
Let me do the song. Wait a minute. Let me do the song. Okay, you may now go. Go ahead. You're welcome.
Wow, it's hard to speak after that introduction.
It's impossible. It's heartwarming. Yeah.
I taught for several years, but went back to school pretty quickly and got my doctorate. And you know, I've done a number of things. I've worked at residential schools for gifted students. I've been a researcher. I've run a college program here at UNC Charlotte for several years. And then I decided that being independent was probably the best route for me, and became a consultant and spent several years writing curriculum. I use the problem-based learning model. I love working with teachers. Every summer, I still work at a camp for gifted students, Camp UNASA, and so, you know, I do try to stay in touch with the kids, which is really important.
It sure is. And with the people who are entrusted to teach, that's why it's so important we have this show today. Okay, what got you interested in teaching gifted children?
Well, I've always been interested in giftedness as a phenomenon. And I would say that part of it has to do with my father, James Gallagher, who was one of the early leaders in the field. So I'm sort of following in
his
footsteps. Yeah. But I've also just sort of had a curiosity about these children who not only learn faster, but tend to have different set of learning characteristics than other students, and what we need to do for them in order for them to really thrive.
I want to ask you to tell me about your dad. Who was your dad, James Gallagher? Since you brought him up, I am not familiar with him, and I want you to brag a little bit and tell everybody who might not be familiar with him. Do it.
Well, thank you. Thank
your dad.
You. My father, James Gallagher, was the first director of the Bureau for the Education of the Handicapped in Washington, D.C., back when there was a Department of Education. Yep. So he was responsible for the early infrastructure, early childhood special education. He was also the author of one of the first textbooks of gifted education and was involved in the first federal legislation for gifted education in the United States.
Holy crow.
I like to say that, yeah, he focused on sort of children on the fringes of education, right? That's the special education and gifted education.
That's fantastic. Is Dad still with us? Let me ask it politely.
Dad passed a few years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. He sounds like a rather gifted man. Okay. Thank you. And thank you for introducing me to him. Okay. I appreciate that. Okay. And be proud of him. So, all right. Mm-hmm. So now we know, okay, what got you involved with this, but it's interesting while we talk about the gifted, okay, you said you're interested in approaching advocacy for, here we go again, the CLED students, CLED, culturally, linguistic, economic, it's culturally, linguistically, economically, see how good I'm doing? Diverse.
You're great.
Okay. Good. Did I do good or what? Okay. Remember when President Trump took that test a few years ago and it was man, woman, TV? That's what I feel like. I feel like he did that day. Okay. I'm getting them all right. Okay. So at any rate, okay, put the culturally, linguistically, economically diverse students in with the gifted, and put those two things together, the excellence gap.
Well,
put all that together. Yeah.
That's one of the biggest challenges in our field, and it has been one of
our biggest
challenges.
By the way, if you do that, I'll get you another PhD. I'll give you a PhD from the University of Larry. No problem. You'll have it this afternoon. So do your best here. Try to put all this together. Yeah, good.
Well, you know, the interest in the field has always been to find every child who's capable of advanced learning, but it is been historically difficult for us to do the job we need to do in finding children who are from these diverse backgrounds, who are children of color or children in poverty, because of the circumstances they grow up in, you know, because they don't always grow up in equally enriched environments, because their schools tend to be under-resourced, because of low expectations for those children in general.
Yep. Yep.
It's hard to find the bright, you know, the diamonds in the rough in that population and really make sure that they have equal opportunity for advanced learning. You know, you're thinking about people like, well, George Washington Carver is a big example, and or Linus Pauling, you know, the Nobel laureate who grew up in pretty dire poverty. But where would we be without them, and how many of those people are we missing today?
You're not going to believe this. I just actually wrote that down here, and I wanted to ask you that. How many kids have we missed? That's exactly what I just wrote. Okay, how many kids have we missed because we're not paying attention here? I mean, it's unbelievable. Okay, you may answer that if you can. Go ahead. Kill us.
I couldn't give you exact numbers, but I can tell you that, you know, according to the data that we have from our National Center for Research on Gifted Education, we are well over identifying, white middle-class children for gifted programs and far under identifying children who are children of color or children who receive free and reduced lunch.
And which begs the question, even if we identify these kids, which is hard enough to do. Are the programs available for them in the schools where they go? They're economically disadvantaged, as an example. Okay, normally an economically disadvantaged family, unfortunately, may live in an economically disadvantaged area with an economically disadvantaged school district. Okay, so if we even find these kids, do we have the capacity to teach them? That's a good question.
And that's the heart of it,
isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
And really, one of the things we want to avoid in this problem is like blaming the victim, which is why I'm glad that you asked the question the way you did, because a lot of the issue has to do with access to programs.
Yeah.
You know, we find that even within a school district, access to gifted programming can be very different on one side of the district from the other. And then the other that sort of accompanies that is mindset, teacher mindset. Are teachers
yep.
looking for giftedness in, say, a Title I school? Or are they so
wow.
focused on the yeah. necessary challenge of bringing students up to par that if a child is sort of performing on average, they're just fine?
Right. It's a brutal situation. It really is. And teachers, by the way, are so – they're fairly – but with all the good hearts and good intentions they have, I have to say it that way, they're not well trained in finding gifted kids. Okay.
Well, this is absolutely, and thank you for raising
yeah.
that. I want to make this point yeah. loud and clear because, you know, even though teachers have to know a lot of things, and I agree with you, teachers are hardworking and most
sure
of the vast majority of teachers I meet want to do the very best they can for all of their kids.
They sure
but
do.
One of the areas where they receive no professional learning in pre-service education is about gifted students. So they go into their classrooms, the regular education teachers, with no idea of what a gifted child looks like, especially from culturally diverse or economically diverse backgrounds.
That's
they
right.
have no idea how to differentiate for those children, even if they find them. So they are really left at a loss as to how to deal with this population.
It's tough out there. It's a tough room is all I can tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now
mm-hmm.
you're in North Carolina. And if I'm reading
yes.
all this correctly, and again, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, this is an NAGC show, National Association for Gifted Children. At NAGC.org, and I got this information from Dave Cutler. Thank you, Dave, over there. I appreciate it, okay? And you're in North Carolina, and you put
mm-hmm.
together, and I want you to talk about this in detail because I only have cursory information here, okay? You put together a conference, and it has something to do with what I said earlier, this Americans Agree report. So take that whole thing and put that into a perspective that everybody can understand, including yours truly.
Okay.
Great.
So this is really a story of serendipity because two things happened at the same time. The first is I was fortunate to be named chair of the advocacy committee for our North Carolina affiliate of NAGC, which is the
Got
North
it.
Carolina Association for Gifted and Talented. At the same time, because I'm a consultant, I wear many hats, and I was involved in this project with the Institute for Educational Advancement in California, where we were taking a look at what does the public think of gifted education? Because we know that parents of gifted students love gifted education. We hear a lot of bad press about inequities in gifted education, but neither of those is really representative. So we did this national public opinion survey, a random sample of Americans, and we asked them, what do you think about gifted education? And I have to admit, much to my surprise, the results came out overwhelmingly positive. There was lot of support for gifted education generally, overwhelming support. And yet, there was also concern about the lack of access to gifted education in some neighborhoods. I took this information to the board at NCADT, and I said, what do we do with this? It looks like gifted education is relatively popular. It looks like people don't want gifted education programs dismantled for equity. What they want is
yeah.
for programs to be ubiquitous, you know, everywhere in every school. So what happens if we leaned into this more positive message about gifted education? And what would happen if we invited some new partners in the room to change the narrative on what we're about as a field and how do we open new doorways to opportunities to help kids by doing that? And that's why we put the conference on. It was a brand new approach to advocacy for us to invite people outside of gifted education,
good,
but who were invested in the lives of children in poverty and children of color to share the problem with them and to really have an opportunity to listen to them describe the problem from their perspective.
Where and when was the conference?
The conference was in 2019. It was one of the last things we got to do pre-pandemic.
Oh, wow.
And it was, yeah. And we held it with our partners at Duke University. The Duke Program in Education was a great partner to us in this.
Right. That's cool. I like Duke. Okay, so talk to me then. What were the results? What came out of it? What came out of all this?
So we brought together, like I said, this diverse group of people who were early childhood educators. They were communities and school members. They were people who worked with first-generation students. And we had – and we brought students to the table, too. They were very interesting. And we discussed the problem. And I think there were a couple of takeaways. First of all, it really confirms the results of Americans Agree that people want more gifted education in more neighborhoods. The people who came went away saying they felt a sense of community, as though they were being seen and heard in a different way than they had been seen before, that the capacity for giftedness in these populations was being acknowledged, was really important to them. The second message we got was, keep going. You know, don't let this event be a one and done. We want to see you take more action. Yeah, so that was really helpful to us. And then we also learned about some things that we need to do within gifted education to help programs be more welcoming and encouraging. One of my big takeaways from the event was that there are families of children of color in particular who are reluctant to participate in a gifted program, even if they're identified, because we need more teachers of color leading gifted classrooms, because we need to identify kids in cohorts so kids don't feel isolated. We need to see all sorts of people reflected in the curriculum that we offer. You know, those were some big marching orders for us.
Right. It's amazing. So with all of this, you got the feeling, and actually the statistics, the data, if I may, that says Americans, okay, pretty much across the board, want more gifted programs. All right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what came out of this. So the question now is, are school districts adding more gifted programs? And we can just focus on North Carolina if you want. But since you're going to be national president, you can talk national too. But so what's going on with that? Where are we now?
Admittedly,
there was a pandemic in between, and there were other things
on
people's minds,
an
emergency situation. But just continue. Go ahead.
Okay, so there's an intermediary step here that I think is really important for us to talk about too, which is that one of the things that we did as an organization is like we realized that we needed these voices at the table more regularly to be advising us on how to proceed. And so we actually formed at NCAGT, we formed a separate advisory group that we meet with quarterly in order to help us make decisions. And one of the things that happened, that group is comprised of people who were at the conference, but they're we've got a former state senator on the group. We've got teachers on the group. We have some superintendents. You know, it's a diverse mix in a lot of different ways. And one day we were talking about, you know, how do we get administrators to pay attention to us? Because this is really one of the key issues. It's like we need to get on the radar of district superintendents, assistant superintendents, because they're the ones who can really require change to happen.
Absolutely.
But the assistant superintendent on our new advisory board said, Sheila, what you really need is to get district teams together. So we submitted a grant to the Z. Smith Reynolds Foundation, which we received, that sort of takes us to this question that you asked about what do you do about programs and how do you get programs into more schools. And so the purpose of this grant was to take it down to the next level of education. And we've been working with 6 school districts now in North Carolina.
Okay.
But the school districts have to bring teams on board, right? We've got to get out of the gifted education silo where gifted kids are only the responsibility of the gifted education program, and to make sure that we're really spreading the responsibility out to other people who impact their lives. So each district had to bring a team that was comprised of a high-level administrator, a school principal, the director of curriculum, the director of Title I programs, and a lead teacher. So up and down the hierarchy and a lot of different roles that impact decisions around gifted education. And thanks to the pandemic, we met on Zoom instead of meeting in person, but that worked out pretty well. We put them in front of the best people we could bring from around the nation to educate them about the excellence gap, like raise their awareness about the importance of the issue, and then to provide them with tools to create solutions. Each district then had to create plans for how they were going to do this. Because, Larry, a solution to this excellence gap problem cannot happen solely in gifted education. It requires early childhood intervention. We usually don't identify for giftedness till second or third grade, and you lose a lot of kids before that if there isn't some level of nurturing or a nice rigorous program to make sure kids are brought up to speed. If those teachers don't know how to look for indicators of advanced ability, there are things that go on around the school with family intervention, with community support, mentorship programs, all of which happen outside the gifted program. You know, the curricular decisions that need to be made, which often happen outside of gifted education. So we wanted the whole team on board to really be thinking about these kids. And that has also been really successful and very influential in terms of helping shift mindset at the district level so that, you know, we really want people to be thinking about how are we serving the top 10% of kids in each school in the district?
You know, how did these 6 districts do, okay, in terms of providing, well, you've got the 6 districts together, all right, and they probably worked this out together, et cetera, et cetera. Then they went back, all right. What's the status of things now? Any district or do whatever. I don't care if you name the district or not. Doesn't matter. But you can if you want to.
Well, the districts, first of all, are very, very different. We had everything small rural districts to large urban districts participating in the project. And, of course, very different environments. And so they had very different plans. And the nice thing about having the opportunity of this grant is that we have lots of different doorways in. So one district might be focusing on early childhood. Another might be looking at different identification methods, how to use local norms and universal screening.
Now I understand.
So, you know, they could right-size their approach to their reality. So one of the things that we're looking at, and each district had to present their plan to their school board, you know, again, trying to raise awareness across the board.
Sure.
So what they agreed together is that they wanted their next step to be to spread the word, right? A team of 6 people is a huge step forward and not nearly enough at the same time. So we will be offering these districts an in-service for the Title I schools, again, online in the fall to, again, spread the word to more principals, to give more tools to more people, to infuse thinking further into the district mindset. So I know that, you know, for a fact, like one district will be starting an early childhood program. Another district is going to be starting an after school enrichment program based on a model presented by one of my colleagues. Another district is going to be looking at a sort of in school, they call it, I'm not going to say it because I'll get it wrong, but they have their expanding an existing program into their Title I schools. So they're expanding access, you know, and focusing there. So it's really very exciting. But one of the most exciting things to me, Larry, goes back to a point we were talking about earlier, is that they are all across the board saying all of our teachers need professional learning on this topic.
They do. They do.
Yeah.
They really do, because they don't get it at the education schools, okay? And, you know, I've always said, you know, I deal with a lot of groups like yours, okay, that have a particular interest within education, okay? And there are specialists in school districts that handle these. And another group would be guidance counselors, as an example, okay? But I still remember, and I went to college a long time ago, but they need a course in what's a school district really like? Who works there? Okay? Okay, and how do you tap into these people, and what do these people need? You're a classroom teacher. Here's everybody else. What do they need from you, and what do you need from them? Okay? Mm-hmm. And that would make an incredible difference. And my point of all that is, if you go to basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you go to a teacher's college right now, they probably won't even have a course for you, of a generic course in understanding gifted kids or any other particular thing you might need. And that makes no sense, because we have to understand all these things about these kids we teach. Okay? And giftedness is just one of the great examples. And I'm not that bright, but it just seems to me to make sense. You know?
Well, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and so now you figured this out. This is good. Okay? Has this been copied in other states? And now, Madam President, when do you take office? When do you take office as president of NAGC, Madam President?
I have another year being president-elect, working with my wonderful colleague Lori Kirsch as president.
Yep.
And yet, you know, Lori and I think very similarly, and so we're already underway. You know, one of the first things, again, is we really need to change the narrative. We need for people to understand that we understand the equity problem in gifted education, and we intend to put our resources towards solving it. We are willing to take the lead on the solution to this problem.
And you just nailed it. You just nailed it, that it is a equity problem. It is an equity challenge. Okay? Gifted education is a challenge, period. Okay?
Yes.
But there is an equity – there is an excellence gap, if I may, and an equity gap. And NAGC recognizes this. We've done shows on this. Okay? So it's going to be it's going to be cool. Now, Lori is president now. Has she told you about the private jet NAGC one that she takes everywhere? You will inherit. This is the problem. This is one of the things I like to do, is tell people this so that they can understand all the accoutrements that come with the job. She's all. I tried to get her on the show today, but she's flying to St. Martin for a week. It's a private jet. She's really not doing that, everybody. That's a joke. Yeah. No letters.
Yeah, that's really not good for our elite.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. But don't feel bad. I do that for everybody. Okay. So this is real. Yeah, this is good stuff. And you guys, that's a really great start. Now, I just want to ask this: there's six districts now participating. Do you expect to expand your North Carolina network of districts, or do you want it to expand to 20 districts? How's that working out?
We want to expand to 100 districts, Larry, but we'd be happy to double our size in the next year. And of course, all that's contingent on documenting our success this year and getting additional funding. You know, districts are so strapped right now, and
they're busy.
It takes a little bit more effort to get anybody's attention right now. And it's,
That's right.
I feel for those teachers, and a shout out to all those general education teachers who are doing such hard work, because they need our support. And so, you know, we will be expanding our efforts, but it's all a question of timing it right so that we have the impact we want to have. At the national level, if I could switch to, you know, the national level, as you know, Larry, I think we issued a championing equity statement to sort of put our foot in the sand on this issue a while back. And NAGC will be holding its second symposium on Black and Brown Gifted Students, that's a teacher-style conference, this summer. So we're really proud of that. But we're also planning a national replication of the conference that we did here at NCAGT to try to bring high-level leaders from diverse perspectives to the table to talk about providing opportunities for children of color and children in poverty and improving access to advanced learning opportunities.
The time is now, everybody. Jump on the bandwagon. Sheila, how do people get in touch with you? If they want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
My Twitter handle is, and I have to look it up because I don't use it that often.
I think I actually have it. I think I actually have that. And it's the funny way you spell your first name. S-H-E-L-A-G-H. Mademoiselle from Ireland, parlez-vous. S-H-E-L-A-G-H 58.
That's right. That's my Twitter handle. They can reach NAGC at NAGC Gifted on Twitter and Instagram. So either one of those would be a good way to reach me.
Right. And it's Sheila, not Chile, as it probably is in Gaelic, right?
It's,
she must be very popular when you go over to Dublin, right? Chile?
Exactly.
How do you do it?
Yes.
Right?
It's like
there you
Chile,
go.
Which also has a Chile. Ph.
Thank you. You're exactly right. That's right. Right? But it's Sheila, everybody. Dr. Sheila Gallagher, president-elect of NAGC.org. Sheila, you're a great guest. Thanks for being here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Larry.
It was
fun.
Bye-bye. She's terrific. Wow, what fun. And doing good stuff down there in North Carolina, now expanding her influence to the whole United States. Okay, Sheila Gallagher, NAGC.org. She's the president-elect. We'll archive over at ace-ed.org. Take care. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.